Fare thee well, O honey. Fare thee well. I had a man, he was long and tall. He moved his body like a cannonball. Fare thee well, old honey. Fare thee well. Don't you remember, it was a drizzling rain, and around my heart there was an aching pain. Fare thee well, oh honey. Fare thee well. If I had wings just like Noah's dove, I'd fly across the river to the one I love. Fare thee well, oh honey.
In the relatively short period of time that his works have been appearing with any real frequency on concert programs, and that's only since his death in 1945, have we come to recognize the real stature of the Hungarian composer Béla Bartók. In fact, he is now considered one of the great composers of the 20th century. Perhaps his most important works are the six-string quartets, so important, in fact, that they are very often considered alongside those giants in the string quartet literature, the Beethoven quartets. What you're going to see and hear in each of these programs is a complete performance of one of the Bartók quartets each time. But before that complete performance, you as viewer and listener, along with myself as program annotator for this entire series, have been invited to sit in on rehearsal sessions of the Fine Arts Quartet as they go through the string quartets of Bartók. This so we can perhaps get answers to questions which might arise, and so that we can better see just what's happening in each of these quartets. Right now, the Fine Arts is working on the first quartet of Bartók, so let's join them. You know, it's really quite an exciting experience to be sitting in this close to a string quartet. The power there is there, and the exciting things that are happening with all four instruments at once. This, of course, from the point of view of a listener. I can imagine how exciting it must be to be sitting there really playing this music.
Well, we very often get just that kind of a remark from people who come back to see us after a concert. And they're right, and so are you. It is exciting to be part of a small musical team like this, to be so close to the music and to be able to get so close to the composer's ideas and his very feelings, particularly with a composer like Bartók, whose intellect and whose emotional ideas come through so strongly.
Well, the quartets were written during his creative output. The first was written in 1907 and the last in 1939. And Bartók came to this country, as a matter of fact, from his native Hungary in 1940. He died here in 1945 at the age of 64.
In fact, here is a man who not only lived in our time, but he wrote for our time. His music is so up to date in his strength and vigor and excitement, and it also has such a wide range of moods and feelings and colors to it.
Unfortunately, though, of course, not everyone shares your enthusiasm for Bartok. I know you just mentioned the word to some people, Bartok, and they throw up their hands right away and say, that's too rough for me.
They seem to throw their hands up, put them over their ears, at least figuratively. They don't want to hear it. Partly because I think it's they feel that it takes hard work, concentration and thought to follow this kind of writing. But after all, why shouldn't a listener expect himself to make that kind of contribution, to take part in listening that way? After all, it takes a composer a lot of hard work and a great deal of concentration to put sounds together into a composition in the first place, especially if he's trying to write something that's more than a simple rehash of the kind of music, kind of sound that is familiar, over-familiar, perhaps, through constant rehearing to listeners. And it takes courage, actually, to write this kind of music when the composer knows that it's likely to call forth that kind of reaction. What's going on here? That's rough listening, rough stuff. It's the kind of, I was just going to say, George, it's the kind of courage, actually, that pays off in the long run. That's the nice thing about it, that no matter what listening prejudices a composer runs into, a composer of this kind, he wins out by the very honesty of the procedure, the hard work involved. And that's one reason that Bartok music has become so popular in the best sense of the word in recent years. What are you going to say?
I was going to say it's the consistent follow-through of all the movements, of all the quartets is marvelous. And you see the musical ideas unfolding just before your eyes in every quartet.
Can we see this unfolding in the first quartet? Would you play some musical examples for us?
Yes. Let's work it backwards, though. Let's start from the end of the quartet and see if we can trace back to the beginning. If you remember the section we were playing just at the start of this rehearsal, you'll probably remember this fragment. Let's all play it at the finish. Now let's go back to the beginning of this third movement and hear how it appears in this spot. Very close to the same thing as you can hear. Now if we go back just a little bit further to the introduction to this movement, the cello gives it in a slightly different version. Back to the very beginning of the second movement, and I have a figure something like this, which of course is again the same idea, only this time used as a background pattern over which the second violin and viola play another version of this idea.
It's actually the first part of it.
Now let's go back to the very first movement, the beginning of the whole quartet.
Wait a minute now. I see where the first set of examples you played there tie together, but that last one, I don't see how that fits in at all. Yeah. What's the relation there?
Well, I think if we resort to a visual graphing out of the line of these three melodic ideas, we'll see that the relationship does follow through, even in the last example we played. I'll play the one from the very end of the quartet. Something like that. Da-da-bum-bum-da-rum. Now the one from the second movement. Boom. This one doesn't fall as quickly. It poises on the top note, da da da, then plunges. Another one from the first movement. This one drops slowest of all. Da da da. But essential to each one of these ideas is the idea of a fall, the plunge at various speeds. And so there is this relationship in shape.
Well, it's this change from this to that is precisely the growth of the musical idea that we've been talking about. And this is one way, and a very good way, for a composer to unify his composition and to give it a distinctive quality and personality. And even if the listener can't put his finger on what it is that gives it the continuity, he still feels the effect of it in the music.
Now can we start from the beginning?
Sure,
let's
okay.
see what it sounds like from bar one.
Just a second. If we're going to start a read-through of the quartet, I think this is as good a time as any to know where we're going. There are three movements in this work. I just want to present the titles of them. Lento, slow movement. Allegretto, faster. And the third movement, allegro vivace, fast, lively. Between the second and the third movement, there's a bridge section, which Bartok himself calls introduction. There's also a bridge between the first and the second movement, even though there's no specific title given to it. It's there, as you'll see, and it links these two movements.
Well, I'd just like to add to that that the reason there are introductions and this hidden bridge section is because Bartok conceived the entire quartet to be played, be performed in one breath, so to speak, no stopping any place. From the first note of the first movement to the last note of the last movement, we play without interruption. And so he had built into the quartet these connecting links.
Well, now let's start with bar one. Hold for it.
A curious thing happens to me every time I hear the beginning of this quartet. It starts out very simply, yet the mood is set right away. In fact, I get so engrossed in this mood that before I know it, we're in a very complex web of sound. I'm never quite sure just how we got there from that simple beginning.
Very true.
I found that here again, it was a help in understanding what's happening in the music. It was a help to my own thinking about it if I visualized it, if I drew it out. And here I have a graph of, well, let's start with one line to begin with. That's the way Bartok starts, the first violin part. This is it, the dotted line. One thing you get from seeing the line drawn out is a fresh realization of the way an interesting melody moves purposefully. It knows what it wants to do. For example, these long notes make resting points in the upward and downward swing of the line. Also, you can see from the line that there's an interesting alternation between slow motion and quick motion. Slow, quick, which again helps the feeling of variety and life in the line. Another thing, you see that there are a number of arcs in the line, here, 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 and that these arcs are not only similar in shape to each other, but are placed with a definite relationship. each one lower than the one before. So you get the feeling not only of smaller arcs of motion, but of a large, generally downward sweep at the beginning of the first violin line. And it all gets the music started off with a sense of drive.
Norm, here's a wire graph of the second violin line. Now, if I take it and place it over the first violin line, you see it's very similar in shape.
Yeah.
But Bartok doesn't do that. He starts the second violin two beats later. The result is rest in one coincides with motion in the other. And we have two threads of a fabric that Bartok is going to show us.
Well, of course, the other two threads are the cello and the viola, who enter this fabric a few moments later in the same relationship that the two violins just had. And so if you see them all together on that graph, you see that it forms a weaving fabric, four threads. And just as a piece of cloth, which is woven out of multicolored threads, we are conscious only of the whole cloth and not the individual threads. So in this fabric of music, we're conscious of the whole cloth and rather than any one individual voice. And this fabric of sound stretches to quite a peak here and then shrinks and trails off very quietly.
Suppose we hear this trailing off passage.
Well, let's hear the peak.
Well, let's start in the
number five.
Number six.
Stage, a floor for this kind of character.
Here's the throb.
Uh-huh. I join the viola in that kind of line in a couple of measures, but first as a violin entrance, first violin, very high, floating,
and very serene.
Serene floating line. And here, the pulsating lines in the middle ground, viola, second violin. Don't have to tell you that that's cello. Now, this represents the change in listening that accompanies this change in texture. At the beginning of the movement, we heard evenly, top to bottom, all four voices equal. Now, it's as though we have to listen with three ears, one for the high violin line, another for the inner voices in the middle, and yet a third for the heavy cello bass.
Okay. Can we hear what this section sounds like, all four instruments?
Good idea.
All
right. Let's do it right from the cello. To go through the whole thing.
I wish we did.
We will a little later on. But let's move ahead now to the last part of the movement where Bartok reintroduces the material which opens the quartet. Only this time he proceeds to build from it directly into a tremendous moment of intensity. And he achieves this in part by having all four of the instruments move for the first time exactly together in the same rhythm. Let's hear how this sounds.
Just to make sure you know where it is, I'll wink at you.
Okay.
Thank you.
movement continues to taper off to a very quiet ending, doesn't it? Kind of a full circle of sound here. It starts very simply and very quietly, then builds up through many textures of sound, and comes back down to a quiet, serene mood like in the beginning.
I think we can move ahead now to the rest of the quartet. And in listening to the second and third movements and considering them, we can think of them in their relationship to the first movement, their place in the quartet as a whole. We're moving from the slow first movement to the faster second movement to the very lively closing movement. And we make the transition through that bridge I talked about before, which is indicated by the overlap of the two titles here.
Can we hear the first section that bridges the first and second movement, the transition between the first and second?
I think we can show that very easily by starting, say, the last four measures of the first movement. And you'll notice that the music is quiet, subsiding. It sounds like it's going to end, but just at the last moment, there's a questioning phrase by the cello and viola, kind of a musical hook which is thrown into the end of the first movement and makes it possible for them to go on.
Building momentum in this transition to make a very smooth transition from the first movement to the second.
The buildup of pace that we'll find working through the quartet actually rises out of the changing character of the three melodic ideas that we singled out before. Suppose I play them.
Oh, this is what I've been waiting for. I'm a repressed conductor.
You play it and I'll beat so we can see the change in the pulse or the beat of each of these phrases.
Great deal of contrast within the first movement. Does this hold true for the other two? Is there contrast within each movement?
Very, very much so. As a matter of fact, this easy swing we just at the beginning of this movement is transformed into a rather furious passage here at 13.
The movement ends quietly as did the first one.
Let's just play the last
31.
Second movement ends here, as you noted before. The third does not start right away, but there's another passage, another transition marked introduction.
And in this introduction, Norm, the cello has the important role. I have a nice little cadenza, and it's introduced by a fanfare and the other three instruments.
Mm-hmm.
that has a cadenza here. I have a cadenza also which closes the section, although quite different in character, right, lyric. Started.
Yes.
That rings
okay.
It off.
Right, but if you talk about the contrast, here's what the viola adds just a bit later.
But finally, we head into that last, that all-out dash that we played at the very beginning. One of the things about this work is that one of the signs of its usefulness is that there are so many climaxes. It's very generous with the excitement.
Well, after that discussion, I'm certainly anxious to hear the entire quartet, as I'm sure the listeners are too, and certainly be looking for all the points that you've been talking about in this discussion. You know, it occurs to me that perhaps some of you, the listeners, are saying to yourselves now, that music is not quite so new and strange as I thought it was before we started this discussion. I think this is tied into Abe Loft's comment right at the beginning of the discussion when he said that it takes some thought and some work when we approach new music. Certainly we've seen that Bartok is not at all afraid to let his musical ideas lead him into some new and very fascinating sounds. We'll see more of this as the series continues. Now let's come to the final performance. Here is the String Quartet No. 1, dated 1907, by Béla Bartók, played by the Fine Arts String Quartet.
Thank you. Quartet Number 1 by Béla Bartók, performed by the Fine Arts Quartet. Leonard Sutton, first violin, Abram Luck, second violin, George Sopkin, cello, Irving Ilmer, viola. Your host for the discussion portion of the program was Norman Pellegrini. For the Educational Television and Radio Center in the studios of WTTW Chicago. This is National Educational Television.
This is KTCA-TV, Channel 2, the Twin Cities Area Educational Television Station, Minneapolis, St. Paul. KTCA-TV now concludes its broadcasting activity for today. Return tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. KTCA-TV is owned and operated by the Twin City Area Educational Television Corporation and is dedicated to the service of the entire Twin City area with programs of an educational, public service, and cultural nature. With studios located on the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota, KTCA-TV operates by authority of the Federal Communications Commission on Channel 2. It is licensed as an educational, non-commercial television station whose purpose is to serve the community. Now, on behalf of the entire staff of KTCA-TV and its Board of Trustees, we wish you a very pleasant good night.